The following is a KTCK Sports Presentation.
Kick it. It's time for the Kick Around, the ticket style show about soccer and all that implies. Two straight hours of HSOs in the Premier League, MLS, the National Team, and Champions League. Soccer never stops, and neither do our hosts. Hoping for an off-season at some point, here are Andy Swift and Peter Welton on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
Que ya lleva dos avisos, el de Coca-Opa, se le pone y Simón, increíble, increíble como Croacia está ganando este partido, porque lo estamos viendo, lo creemos, increíble el gol de Croacia, gol, gol de Croacia.
All right, Sam, that was pretty good.
Told you.
Thanks, Sammy.
Hi to Hopi ones. Welcome to today's Kick Around. As normal, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket, where you, the good P1, gets to sit around, talk soccer, and all that implies. For those new here, hi, I'm Peter, and with me is my soccer-talking BFF extraordinaire, the amazing Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter. You're not all bitter that he chose a Croatia goal, so... That's nice.
No, I'm just glad it was actually a good and quality and qualifying goal to be the opener for our illustrious show.
It was own goal scoring another goal, by the way.
Is that what
the
it was?
Leading scorer.
In Grible.
The leading scorer.
And in Grible.
In the,
is that how you say it?
Increíble.
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 Why do you sound like a cartoon Spanish villain?
Because maybe I am.
You sound like your Pepe plays, Gonzalez is going to fight you, or Speedy Gonzalez, whatever the cartoon character was.
I'm sorry. For those who didn't get to hear the mix, I'm still completely in a twist and blown away by Bruce's question, which of why do the end soccer games and penalty kicks?
How would the French say incredible? Incredible.
And now that I think about it, I think Bruce actually has a valid question. Why do they end soccer games and penalty
kicks?
He's
not the first one to ask it.
So we answered it off air, but the reason is because of broadcast windows. They used to have a replay, and that got cumbersome once,
so I owe Bruce
once
an
TV
apology.
Became a thing.
Because when he initially asked the question, I thought it was ridiculous, but now that I think about it for a few minutes, maybe Bruce has a point. It was a fair question,
yeah,
and I judged it unfairly. Mm-hmm. But he was wrong about sweepers. So there, we're even. Today on the show, we will talk lots of Euro 2020. Now, England and Ukraine are playing right now as we speak, and England scored very early in the game, much to everybody's surprise.
Harry Kane scored another one.
Rock you like a Harry Kane. And they're in the 17th minute, and they're up 1-0, so we'll kind of keep everybody posted about that. We will talk a little Copa America.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst and flagrant red cards I've ever seen in my soccer-watching career took place in that game.
I think they should have stopped the game right there and just given the game to the other team that suffered that foul.
And clearly it happened against Andy's favorite team in the tournament. And Buzz Carrick from thirddegree.net will call in to talk a little Huntsman and America's favorite soccer segment, yes, known as the Dribble. And we'll talk about a bunch of stuff there, including... A trio of new Premier League managers have been named this week.
Finally.
But let us start off with the quarterfinals of the European Championships. As we said, England and Ukraine are playing now. Have you watched the three other games that have been completed?
Yes, sir.
Did you do your proper kick-around homework, Andy Swift?
By watching the games.
Mr.
Yes.
Andy North?
Yes. Yes, Andy of... I prefer Andy of the North.
Andy of the North.
Isn't it like...
Now that
Nanook of the North.
I do like Andy of the North. That may be your...
Did you know... have you seen the documentary, Nanook of the North? No.
No.
Okay.
The North remembers.
Wait. There's
Nanook of the North.
No.
Yeah, a documentary on the Nanook Indian tribe from the
northern
part of
the
world.
I literally thought that was like a Warner Brothers cartoon character.
No, if you've studied film in school.
Mm. Oh, I studied film. Look at me.
Nanook of the North. Did you take documentary class?
No, I knew it was a documentary, but like I don't like just the way you said it was very pretentious.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's him.
What do you mean it's me?
You're Mr. Like I know
simple?
All film. No.
Not, what?
Yeah.
No.
You're always like, have you seen this? Have you seen that?
Well, that's because I'm lame and I just sit around and watch TV exactly. all day. Not because I'm classy or anything like that. All right, let's get into the games. So this morning, I had predicted that the Czechs would beat the Danes 2-1. So I got the score right. I just didn't get it in the proper order.
Yeah, so you did the predict. Yeah, I guess when the second round started, you re-predicted, right? Because you wouldn't have done that
right.
from... Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you actually did have the Czech Republic beating Denmark.
I did. I really felt like, based on how the Czechs had been playing, we always talk about Mike Reiner's premise of that effing team.
I thought that was Denmark.
I had gone back and done... So Denmark, to me, is the team that has that good, heartwarming feeling story.
Oh, and this is a different...
That's not that effing team.
This is a different genre.
There's a different kind of category. Okay. And I thought about a lot. I thought... again, I think about this stuff a lot during the week, Andy. And the narrative I came up with is that Denmark is the team that has captured the hearts of the world because of the Christian Eriksen cardiac arrest.
Right.
And that the Czechs may actually end up being that effing team.
And they met. Has that ever happened where the team that captures the hearts...
That's a good question.
...meets the effing team? Has that ever happened?
I'm sure it probably has in a sport somewhere or a Sunday pub league or, a Wednesday night softball league or something like that.
Right. But not at the Euro level. This is probably a first for the Euros.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this. If pre-tournament I had told you and looked you in the eye and said, Andy, you need to put all of your money on Denmark making it to the semifinals without Christian Eriksen, would you have taken my bet?
No, of course not. If you say without Christian, without knowing the circumstances behind it, and without, no, you'd say no, not without him. I had him finishing first in the group prior to the tournament, and that all went south once that happened. So I'm not surprised they're doing well, but for them to get to the semis, it's a huge accomplishment.
They were very impressive today because I do think the Czechs have proven to be one of the more surprising teams through the tournament. There's been a lot of really nice little stories about the Czech team, some of the games that they've won to get to this point. I did think they were going to beat the Danes, though. I thought the Danes would just finally wind out. But they didn't. The goal they scored, that second goal they scored, is one of my favorite goals of the tournament.
That assist, I dream of that assist.
Oh,
right?
Outside of the right foot. The cross into the box with the outside of the inside foot.
The outside of the inside foot.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Well, but I also, it starts back with Vestergaard, the 18-foot-tall center back, playing an absolutely beautiful line-breaking through ball into space in behind that guy runs into, and as you said, hits it with the outside of his inside foot, perfect bending cross.
Yeah.
And then...
you remember Modric's goal, the one you really liked.
That's my favorite.
So this was the assist equivalent for those that haven't seen of that finish. Yeah.
Great goal. One of the best goals of the tournament. And they held on now because the Czechs came out.
Dolberg.
Thank you. The Czechs came out in the second half, and they got firing. They scored a goal, and the Danes were able to hold on and do really well. And the Czechs do have a reason to bitch because that first Danish goal should not have been allowed because that was not a corner kick. That was a goal kick.
But they showed, I thought on replay.
No. I don't think it touched the Czech player. In fact, I don't even think it was close.
Mm. Now,
which makes me nuts about VAR, because you would think if the miss of that is so obvious that it then gives that team an advantage to immediately score a goal in that way. That's one of those situations that I think VAR should be used to correct.
Yeah, so to explain it, VAR won't check the corner or goal kick.
Well played, Tyler.
Right? So even though there was a mistake probably made, VAR cannot reverse that call.
Right.
Otherwise, we'd be reversing calls left and right.
Right. And that's the reason why they don't is because that probably happens way more than we realize.
So once the corner is taken and the goal is scored, you're saying VAR at that point, but how far back do you go? The previous play?
Incident? I think it's probably, if you're going to institute a rule, it probably is limited to the decision between goal kick and corner kick.
So you're saying VAR should, like this specific situation where a goal is scored on a corner, they should go back and make sure it was a legit corner?
If there is a disagreement as to whether or not it was...
So how about this? How about it's a corner and they score on the corner, but the play before that led to the corner, it was a legit corner, but there was a foul made right there on the line and they didn't call the foul and it led to the corner.
You confuse me.
I'm saying, like, what if there's a play right that results in the corner that was a foul?
Right.
You're saying they should go back and review that also? I mean, there you can, it, like, that creates so many tentacles.
Okay, you talked me out of it.
Yeah, see? Right. Thank you.
I don't want to do that anymore.
Okay.
Less VAR. How about that? Can we agree less VAR? I'm just saying, if you want to look back at the result, if you're a fan of the Czech Republic and you want to bitch about how it ended up, I think that's a reason to be mad, because that goal probably shouldn't have been, the Danish shouldn't have been given that corner kick.
Or maybe you talk to your defenders and say, mark up on a corner, because the guy was like, completely open in the middle of the box.
He was. Now, out of this game comes our current leader for the Golden Boot, Mr. Schick.
Oh, I thought it was own goal.
No, Schick and Ronaldo are at top with 5 goals.
I know, you're not getting my joke. Own goal has 9.
I know.
But yeah, so Ronaldo, well, they're both going to end up there.
So, well, here's the funny part. Go through the list of the top, I think everybody all the way down to now Harry Kane at 4, at 3, or somebody, no, Sterling at 3.
Yes, Sterling,
I think,
at
are
three.
All out of the tournament.
Sterling at 3, Dolberg has 3.
So Dolberg is still in it. So he is still in it. Sterling is in it, but everybody above them, like the top 5 scorers in the tournament, are all out of the tournament now.
Correct.
So there's that thing. And then yesterday, pretty exciting soccer that we got. I got both the results right in my prediction, just not, I got one of the scores correct. But I was not anticipating the Swiss and the Spanish to go to PKs.
I don't think many people were. And heading into the quarter, Spain was the second favorite to win it all.
Spain
which,
was
which
really
surprised me. Yeah, according to bookmakers,
I didn't realize.
Yeah,
this. Especially on the eve of the tournament when they were having a bunch of roster issues.
Yeah, but they had scored 5 goals in the last 2 games. Plus, Italy was playing Belgium. They were playing each other, and they figured, okay, one of those is knocked off, so it gives Spain a better chance.
Oh, I thought leading up to this round, they were the second favorites. Yeah, both of these games were really good. I thought ultimately we have to give a lot of credit to the Swiss for playing better. I'm always thrown off by the Swiss, and this is one of those silly, naive American stereotypes that was built up in my youth. But I'm always, I always assume that the Swiss are like this super kind, nice,
always on time.
Very kind and nice, and there's nothing ever kind of frightening and aggressive about them. But man,
they wave
the Swiss soccer
flag.
Players
neutral.
Is very, very aggressive and kind of mean.
Oh,
they're not.
You think?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Not efficient and...
It's not about efficiency. I'm talking about personality and kind of attitude.
Yeah.
They're very competitive.
They have to. It's a small, tiny nation.
I just always feel that they're supposed to be super neutral and kind and like
help
your opponent off the ground kind of player.
You want them in sport to just kind of bring that neutrality. Ah, if you beat us, it's okay. We're neutral.
That's what I kind of assume. But then they score a goal and they're running around making all these angry faces and fist pumping and stuff. But they did almost best the Spanish and they got to PKs. And boy, what a disappointment for the Swiss after literally putting together some of the best penalty kicks against the French earlier in the week, which we'll talk about in a minute. Just terrible PKs by the Swiss, and the Spanish move on by the skin of their teeth to the next round, which will then now face off against, I'm going to guess, the favorites to win it all now, which are the Italians.
Yeah. We have to consider England if they come through because they'll be playing at home.
Right. Correct. That's fair.
So there's that. But yeah, I mean, Italy, did you also pick Italy when we reset our predictions entering the second round?
I picked them to win this game, and I did. Yes, I did. I had the
Italians. Because I picked them now to win it. Remember when we reset?
I think I had them losing the next game.
You did? Okay.
I think so.
Who'd you have in the final against England?
I had French and Germans going
through. You had French, yeah.
My bracket is so broken.
Yes, everybody's is. Everybody's is.
Okay, yeah. It's really bad.
It's been loopy. Do you agree? It's been a fantastic tournament. No,
we
don't agree.
We should talk about that a little bit. But I do want to talk about the Italians and the Belgians, which we haven't finished talking about yet, because I thought that was a great game. only screwed up by one significant mistake that I don't know how you get around, which was the inclusion of Kevin De Bruyne, who should not have played yesterday. He admitted to the press afterwards that he thinks he's playing on torn ligaments in his ankle.
And he looked bad.
And he was terrible. Like, have you ever seen Kevin De Bruyne in the entirety of watching that guy play
the
game?
What's the hype, right?
Have you ever seen him commit that number of misplayed passes in the entirety of watching him play soccer, much
once
less than one
to,
in a game?
Yeah, once he got to two, it was like too many, right?
There was that moment where he had a break. Mm-hmm. He won a ball in their half of the field, and he beat an Italian defender into open space, and he overplayed the ball.
I remember the play.
And he just kind of stopped. Yeah. And it was in the second half, and you could tell he was gassed.
Yeah.
But my question is, mm-hmm. if you're the manager of this team and Kevin De Bruyne comes to you and says, hey, look, I feel like for my nation I got to play, but his ankle's the size of a melon, mm-hmm. how do you make the decision not to let him play? He's right. The best player on the best team.
But we don't know how it all went down either, do we?
No, but I have to assume that when you know these guys pretty well, and when you're watching warm-ups and the training leading up to it, he couldn't have done that much training.
Right. Are you, like, I'm a bigger proponent when you have this situation with a player like De Bruyne and an injury like his, that you bring him on as a sub as needed as opposed to starting him.
Yeah, they had too much other quality. And I'm not saying he's the reason why they lost the game. He's not necessarily why they lost the game. I just, if in the push to try to tie the game and get a better position overall in the game, I think they would have had a better chance versus the Italians. Who, by the way, who I've really loved in this tournament, all the reasons why I generally dislike the Italian national team came flooding back in this game with all their shenanigans and fakeries.
Who's the...
Immobile.
Thank you. We'll talk about that.
We reposted the video on our Twitter account.
You did?
Yeah. Artificial intelligence computer did.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, Immobile goes into the box. He has a kind of a half collision, and he goes, and he's writhing on the ground in the box when the play continues.
And
Italy goes on
and
scores the goal. Yes. So seconds later, Italy scores the goal, and he's still on the ground grabbing whatever he's grabbing. And then he kind of looks up, and then he gets up, and he runs off to go celebrate. And it's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen.
So he fell in a heap. The other team's yelling at him. His teammates are completely ignoring him. Nobody's calling for a foul.
They all know he's making it up.
Yeah, they're all pinging the ball around.
And there was way too much of that by the Italians yesterday.
And my question is this. Didn't Belgium have a beef that him going down like that was a distraction defensively?
No, not really.
I mean, you're just supposed to keep playing anyway, right?
Look,
till the whistle?
Belgian defense was always going to be their weakness. Italy deserved, I think, ultimately to win the game, but it was discolored by all of these ridiculous antics that I don't think are necessary for time wasting. Oh, by the way, are you like me, just delighted by the fact that the Italian goalkeeper gets to play with his dad in this tournament?
Are you talking about the defender?
Yeah, Donnarumma and Chiellini.
Yeah.
They look like father and son.
Who is your favorite player in this tournament? Or just watching? Or just
I don't know. Let
to me
think
it's
about
him.
That. Who? Chiellini?
Yes, just because of how he is. He's laughing. I mean, to him, he's at a party.
Yeah, he's
enjoying. Like, it's the time of his life.
It was that moment in the game yesterday where he's clearly doing something that's agitating the referee with Axel Witsel, and the ref calls him out on it, and he gives Witsel this big hug and a big
and
smile, and it's all over with. Yeah. So that's not a bad shout. That's a good one. He's pretty good. I'm glad to see father and son playing in the same tournament. All right, when we come back, we will follow up with all the other stuff that happened this week in the Euros here on the Kick Around. A little bit later in the show, I will share a story of Barcelona and the porn website. Coming up later on the Kick Around.
Does Andy North star in it?
Andy of the North. All right, we're going to continue talking all things European 2020, Europe 2020, as England still leads Ukraine 1-0. And this stinks that we have to do the show while the best game of the day, at least I assume this will end up being the best game of the day, is while we're trying to do the show.
First game today was pretty good. Come
so
on,
if you're
man.
A good P1 watching England-Ukraine and listening to the kick around at the same time, we love you. Just know that. Now, this is also, if this was a World Cup, Andy, you and I would be doing a nightly wrap-up show,
which makes
life so much easier to do because you watch the games and then you get to talk about them the same day.
Yeah.
We're not doing that for the European Championships,
the Euros.
Which is weird because now, since the last time we've done a show, there's been, I don't know, 8-10 games played, and a lot of stuff happened since we were last on.
Mm-hmm.
The Dutch got knocked out.
Yes.
Did you? Okay. First question: the Dutch lost to the Czechs 2-0, which is tied a lot to a red card incident with De Ligt.
Yes.
Do you remember this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that a legit red card? Do you think it was fair to throw him out of that game?
Yeah. Don't
you think
you?
Do you think he meant to grab that ball? I'm just wondering.
Well, if you then have to prove intent.
Okay.
Right. I mean.
Yeah.
You can't.
I felt bad for him. I look.
Yeah. Of course, you feel bad for him.
He's still
a good kid, I guess.
Yeah, still Frank De Boer, and they were weirdly constructed.
But the question here is, are you shocked the Netherlands got knocked out?
By the Czechs, yes. But that's where I began to wonder. That's part of the reason why I thought the Czechs would win today, because I really felt like the momentum was on their side. But I had the Dutch beating the Czechs in that game.
Yeah,
originally.
I think you know, most people did. I did, just because. But you're not surprised if they ended up losing the game, I think.
I would have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then there was the big Belgium-Portugal game. The end of Cristiano Ronaldo, probably, for that team.
Yeah, I remember that game. And Portugal had chances, but Ronaldo, that game, did not have a particularly good game. Because I was arguing with you a little bit in the prior show that I thought Ronaldo was having a decent tournament. Mm-hmm. I think you disagreed. He didn't have a good game that game.
And then Tuesday, I guess it was Monday, maybe, one of the craziest days of knockout tournament soccer you could ever imagine starts with Croatia 3, Spain 5, and then France losing to the Swiss on penalty kicks, which is so weird because the scoring sequences of both those games ended up going the same way, meaning there was a team up 3-1. And then giving up two goals late to force it into extra time.
Yeah, in fact, the losing team scored the first goal in both cases as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the minutes of the goals were kind of
very close.
Also,
it was really a quality day of soccer insanity. But to have it end with the French losing to the Swiss on penalty kicks with an Mbappe.
Yeah, so
attempt saved.
We should talk about the game because it leads to this final shot by Mbappe. And the way the game played out, Switzerland went up, and they nearly went up 2-0. They had penalty kick saved.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
And it wasn't but a minute or two after that France scored their first goal.
The two Benzema goals.
And then they scored 2 minutes after that. And it was suddenly 2-1 when it could have been 2-0 Switzerland. It was suddenly 2-1 France in a span of 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely changed. And then Pogba had his goal, which was an amazing goal.
It was a worldie. And then he over-celebrated
the tournament by just standing there.
Well,
pointing to himself.
No, he ended up doing like 7 different goal celebrations.
He just stood there and pointed to himself.
Oh no,
right?
He ended up doing a dance with one of his teammates.
Oh, I didn't see.
He did
all
like
this.
A crazy handshake with somebody else, and
this
then
is
he
afterwards.
Stood in one spot and did a weird little Mortal Kombat finishing move.
Okay, so which then goes to what I'm about to say. So now they're up 3-1. Pogba's doing like 18 celebrations. They're all thinking they're through. You know,
we all did.
We're champions, blah, 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 right? And then Switzerland came back and tied it. And the body language, particularly Mbappe's body language.
I didn't notice this.
Was, you could see it in his face. His like, you know, he'd try to get a ball, he couldn't get it. This is after it's 3-3 and it's headed into extra time. There was just something in his head at that point that like that he couldn't believe that they had been tied. And so once we go to PKs and everybody scores, by the way,
how many players stepped up to hit the ball and you went, oh, he's missing it? And he just ends up hitting a great.
There were so many quality PKs taken. And then when he stepped up and when he was doing his walk to the ball, I just said, there's something off about him and he is going to miss this. Of course, you got to do it on Twitter for anybody to believe that you were actually thinking that these days. But there was just something about him after they were tied that just changed. His attitude changed. And as we know, PKs, the mental part carries.
Oh,
right?
For sure. Yeah, I was convinced Pogba was going to have his PK saved or he was going to miss it, one of the two.
Well, he was pretty clinical with his.
He was. But I thought he would do one of those crazy, overly fancy run-ups and goof it up. He didn't. But you're right. Mbappe, just for whatever reason, he didn't hit it right. I thought Sommer just read it really, really well.
Mm-hmm. So the heir apparent to Messi, Ronaldo, the next one, right? This is who we're touting to be the next one, is the one that missed.
And then you're a player of such importance and so beloved that hours later, none other than Pele tweets you a pat on the head, it's going to be all right tweet.
Yeah.
How amazing was that?
Yeah, when Pele.
Could you imagine a bad day at work and Pele tweets you, Andy, it's okay. You'll get to negotiate that sponsorship next time. Don't worry.
Or 14-year-old Andy when he misses a PK in a shootout. By the way, fascinating article in The Athletic regarding the psychology behind the PK in a shootout, not just taking PKs, but in a shootout in a tournament like this.
Hey, Andy, why do they decide soccer games with penalty kicks?
Oh, Lord, not this again.
Broadcast windows, Peter. Broadcast windows.
That's what it is. That's actually a legit question. All right. So France out, Germany out, Portugal out, Hungary out, group of death. Gone.
The only group not to advance somebody into the quarterfinals was the group of death. The only group. It's unbelievable.
It is pretty ridiculous.
So was that such a good group after all? Maybe not.
All right. So you asked me if I thought this had been a good, exciting, over-the-top tournament.
Well, no, if it's just
I might surprise you with my answer, and we'll talk about that next here on the Kick Around. What are you doing, Sam?
What do you mean?
Never mind. I swear. He spends the entire week just sitting in his parents' basement coming up with terrible rejoinder music.
You don't like
for
Irish
our
music.
Soccer show.
You don't like Irish music?
Well, this isn't Irish music, first of all.
Oh, it's not? I thought it was.
No.
What is this?
Point made.
You gotta figure it out.
Point made.
He has three more cracks to figure out what it is. So.
It's halftime of England-Ukraine. It looks like a contentious match as England scored in the fourth minute to make 1-0. And since I predicted a 1-0 result after extra time, if they go a full 85 minutes without scoring another goal either side, that's going to be... I mean, I just thought that this would be a pretty boring game, and while it's being played behind me on television, I'm going to guess it's not a very exciting game because they're just two sides that kind of sit and wait for their opportunities, and when you have two teams that play like that, that ends up being pretty snoozy quality soccer, right?
Then why did you say this was going to be the better of the two games today?
Because it was England.
Okay, I see how you are. You had that effing team against the sentimental favorites
because,
in the other one.
Because I also thought that the winning goal would happen in extra time.
Okay.
That was the other thought.
It's all Sancho-related. That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. Notice how he starts now. Like, he gets signed by
all
Man United.
Sudden,
and suddenly he's starting for England.
He gets $85 million to move, and all of a sudden he's an England starter.
Now, earlier this week, speaking of England... A historic game took place. For the first time in longer than most of us have been alive, England beat Germany in a knockout round of a tournament. I did watch a game, yeah. And I thought that was a thoroughly enjoyable game.
Oh, sure, yes, of course, it was enjoyable.
And if I told you that the game would be England winning 1-0, and then suddenly somebody would turn a ball over to Thomas Mueller at midfield, and he essentially would have an opportunity to run in one-on-one with a goalkeeper. How much money would you have put on him hitting that goal and tying the game?
If you would have shown me the sequence and had me bet on it after he, like the 1 second after he actually shoots it, I would have bet that
you
he would have scored.
Yes, yes. There was somebody, I heard somebody say, I've rewatched that literally 25 times, and every time he shoots it, I think it's going in.
Yeah. Unbelievable. But that's the game,
right? It
didn't
go in.
That's the game.
Yeah, and then they turn around and make it 2-0, and that was a great result. And for the English fans, it's just such a monkey off the back kind of
because it, yeah,
result.
Against Germany, you mean?
Well,
because,
Germany yeah. at Wembley.
Advancing.
Advancing. Yeah. It does so many things. And the thing is, we're watching this again today with Southgate, is, you know, when the starting 11 came out, I was so bummed out. I'm like, I can't believe he's adjusting to match the Germans on the wings, and it's so defensive-minded, but I'll be damned if it's not working out. And there is some credit to the fact that if you think about, like, how Portugal won this same tournament last time, winning and grinding out 1-0 wins, or they haven't allowed a goal all tournament.
Right, and Portugal was not the first country to win a World Cup or a Euro doing it that way.
The Greeks,
yes.
I mean,
just
there's
many.
A long
the Italians
list of, yeah.
have done it, yes.
Now, the other game, that's how we get to England playing Ukraine today, and again, it's at halftime, and England is winning 1-0. The other game I want to talk about because of a specific incident, which was the Swedes being knocked out by Ukraine.
Yes.
And I want to ask you about the red card.
Yeah.
Because I had so much fun. So I had my own old man indoor soccer that night, Tuesday night. And after our game, we all sat around and everybody debated this particular incident over and over. And I could, for every person that I could point to you that said that is absolutely in no way a red card, I can show you another person that says, oh my gosh, no, that's totally a red card.
Right. Is this the studs up but not intentional studs up red card?
Yes, it's the Swedish player coming in. He clears the ball. His leg is up.
Yeah.
He gets the ball, and the Ukrainian player literally runs into his foot at the knee, but then his knee hyperextends in extremely gruesome fashion.
Yeah.
And that player actually is out of the tournament. I think he tore his ACL in that incident.
Yeah, that was career-threatening.
But it wasn't to you. And by the way, in real time, it was called a yellow. It was given a caution. VAR told the ref to go look at it. He went and looked at it maybe once, turns around and says, nope, that's a red.
Yeah.
Was that a red?
I think it is because the studs were up high.
He's playing. He literally.
The studs are up high.
Okay.
They're knee high. Studs up knee high.
Well, that's how he the ball is knee high.
I know, but that it's still we always argue.
There's no player at the ball when he kicks it away. The Ukrainian player has to run into his leg to make contact. He didn't make contact with the Ukrainian player. The Ukrainian player makes contact with his foot.
I'm watching it again. But I remember thinking at the time that you have to be careful to put yourself in situations where that happens.
That is the argument made for why it was a red card, which is you are ultimately responsible for where your feet and arms are,
right.
One, and two, in endangering an opponent. Mm-hmm. My concern is that...
Are people going to start running into people?
Well, I don't know.
So now I'm watching it. I also thought of this. He sees the player coming. It's not like the player appeared out of nowhere suddenly and ran into his leg.
Mm-hmm.
He's aware. He has situational awareness, which is important here. If you have situational awareness, you know that you're going for a 50-50 ball. You see the player coming.
See, to me, 50-50 means that the opponent is at the ball at the same time you're at the ball. The Ukrainian player is two steps away, at least.
But he's coming on, and you're doing this. Yes. Now that I see it again, red card.
Wow. See, to me, it's a yellow. No. Now, this leads me to my other debate point, which was you asked me earlier if I thought this has just been an outstanding and wonderful tournament.
Hasn't been fun to watch.
It has, but I had this epiphany today, which is typically the best international tournaments, World Cups, even Gold Cups, whatever they are, always come with a breakout star. The Messi, the whoever, just figure it out, whoever you want it to be, Landon Donovan, whatever it is. There's always a player that just grabs,
transcendental player,
that just grabs the public's attention and everybody's, and they're just, I don't think there has been one in this tournament, and I'm not even sure there's been an entire team that, other than the Danish,
because of the story.
Christian Eriksen story, there hasn't been, there really hasn't been a really cool story to grab onto.
Right.
Has there?
No, that's a good point. I don't disagree with that. I think the story is that the games have just been fun. I think we expected these Euros to be drab and boring and COVID-ridden. And by COVID-ridden, I mean like the players are going to be worn out because of all the compressed schedule.
Right.
Not that they would all have COVID. And it hasn't been the case. I mean, has the quality of soccer been the highest we've ever seen?
No, international tournament.
Or in a World Cup, it's not, but it's about the emotion.
Right.
You know, and I think these games have been entertaining and emotional, and we've picked sides, and there are neutral countries I've never rooted for before that I'm kind of rooting for because of the storyline or the game has been entertaining. I don't know.
Yeah, I just... It has been overall a good tournament. It just, there's something missing from it that I can't, and that's where it comes to this point, which is the element of the fact that the tournament is not being played in a singular host country part of this, where we have game to game, there is giant crowds, like some of the stuff we've seen in Hungary when Hungary was playing, or even the game at Wembley where it was 40% full and the English fans were going bonkers at Wembley against the Germans. And then you've got these other games like we had earlier today where it was like, good Lord, is it even half full?
It hasn't been consistent that way. I am not a fan of multiple countries hosting, like two countries hosting a tournament, but multiple countries like this hosting a tournament. To me, I think it does take away. I enjoy when a tournament is played in one country and the fans of that country also get behind the tournament itself. But, you know, part of it is we have to ask ourselves, if this was a non-COVID situation, all stadiums would be kind of full. Would it be different? And I think it would be, because you compare to Copa America, where they've been played in empty stadiums, and it's like night and day. Even a few fans here in Europe and these European games, makes it much better.
A few fans and authentic audio from a half-empty stadium is still better than an empty stadium with fake fan noise, right?
Yeah, or player audio, which is also weird.
Yeah, true.
If that's the alternative, I'll take this.
But my other question relates to the fairness issue, which you've heard talked about a lot in this tournament, which is because of the fact there were a ton of host nations. England is maybe the best example because of the way that all kind of fell together. If England wins this game today and they make it all the way to the final, they will have played every game
but one
in Wembley except this one.
Yeah, except this one in Rome.
And then there's been other instances where teams were playing all their group stage games in their home country.
Yeah, Holland, Denmark.
Italy.
Hungary.
Yeah, so that to me also was a weird part of that decision-making process.
Now, typically...
And I do think it's changed the tournament.
Typically, one country gets to host all its games.
Two at most.
And in this case, it's four or five. And, you know, depending on who advanced and if you advanced first in your group, you got to... So England really turned out to be the only true beneficiary of this because they advanced in first and the schedule played out to where they're going to get to keep playing in Wembley, right? The others, not so much. So it's almost like England's hosting these Euros in a way.
Well, because they're playing well, and the way that the bracket has fallen together, if in fact they continue to go on and win this game, most certainly. Because, by the way, the last time England won a tournament was 1966, and there are a lot of really weird parallels that are shaping up that match the 1966 run by England,
including
the number of clean sheets that they produced. up to this point. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stats and stuff that are like,
they
wow,
beat Germany in that
that's kind of spooky how this is turning out.
They beat Germany in that one as well. They beat them in the final, but they still beat Germany.
All right, so England now has scored again, and oh, look, a Manchester United player scored. To make it 2-0.
So your prediction is wrong.
My prediction was wrong.
They won't finish 1-0. The other issue with all these countries, with the one tournament being played in so many countries, is the travel. You know, it's nice when, and again, this is a COVID year, so that's kind of weird anyway, but it's nice when one country hosts the tournament and fans from all the countries playing in it can easily travel between venues. And it's a little bit more complicated, yeah. I think.
The other thing I want to talk about is a man named Derek Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Derek.
Derek Ray.
Derek Ray is a soccer play-by-play guy. He's been around forever. He is Scottish, and he did the game this morning, the Czech-Denmark game. Now, Derek goes way back in my book because I used to make fun of Derek when he was one of the original Major League Soccer play-by-play guys, and when he took that gig, he made the odd choice to try to hide his Scottish accent, and he would try to do MLS games sounding like an American, not well, and he ended up sounding like a drunk Chuck Woolery.
Okay.
Because he has this very kind of demanding or commending way of presenting things with this Scottish voice, and now he's gone back to his natural Scottish accent, but his claim to fame and the thing that he loves to tell everybody about is the amount of hours in his day that he puts into learning the correct pronunciation of everybody's name in the dialect of that particular nationality. So, Andy, if I say, could you say Hugo Sanchez? If you were talking to me as an American, you would say
Hugo Sanchez.
But if you were talking to somebody in Spanish, you would pronounce it
Hugo Sanchez.
Right.
Right. And that drives me nuts. And I've talked about this on air, off air, a lot. And, you know, I pronounce Spanish names the way the typical P1 would understand it.
You just say it.
Right.
Like
I say Ronaldo. Right. I don't say Ronaldo, which is the way you pronounce it in Portugal. And he's Portuguese. We say Ronaldo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I can start pronouncing Ronaldo every time we talk about Ronaldo, but it would seem weird, and half the people might not understand who I'm talking about.
So as I was watching this morning, and Derek was in like the most extreme mode of perfect pronunciation of every one of these Danish and Czechoslovakian names, I thought this must be driving Andy absolutely batty.
Yeah, he drives me batty for a different reason, because I think he overacts his whole accent thing, or not his accent thing, sorry, his delivery style.
Oh yeah,
his delivery style is over dramatized.
Yes,
right,
everything is very dramatic, everything.
Yes.
When Gordon makes that joke about somebody saying something and then they kind of like punctuate it with a sniff, like, hey, I got that done. Yeah, that kind of that the Derek Ray's version of that is the way that he makes every statement. It's almost like it's got this perfunctory sniff at the end of it. Like, hey, did you see what I just pulled off?
Right, but in the play by play dramatic voice.
Yes.
So that drives me more bonkers than the pronunciation thing. So I don't even get to be
mad about the
because I can't get past the other part. Now, some people will say, look, you know, they players appreciate you saying their name the right way and this and that. I don't know. I think most players are actually used to people from different parts of the world pronouncing their names different ways, because we play a very global sport. We're talking about a very global sport.
Funny
and
you
it's
mentioned,
just the way it is.
Because about 2 months ago, Derek Ray put on Twitter a lengthy thread telling the story about how in a European tournament, he went down and talked to a player about how to pronounce his name. I think he may have been an Israeli player. I don't remember. And he pronounced it correctly, and the guy ended up scoring a goal in the game that Derek was covering. And years later, he ran into that player and he said, you don't know how much my dad appreciated you pronouncing our last name correctly. And that apparently set Derek on a course to make sure that he pronounced everybody's name accurately.
Yeah. you know.
So I'm the bad guy for making fun of him for doing it.
Well,
you that's know, the lesson we need to learn yeah. here is I'm the bad guy.
You are always the bad guy about things like this, but it kind of doesn't drive me nuts. But there's a reason why I don't pronounce names of other languages I speak fluently exactly as they are.
I butcher names all the time, and I admit that I do that. It's probably a learning disability that I have that I didn't know I had. But I think Derek carries it a little too far, and it's distracting from the overall presentation. That's really the point I was trying to make here.
How would you pronounce Harry Kane in English? As in, Harry Kane scored another goal to make it 3-0.
And he five-holed the goalkeeper, too.
It's
incredible.
Coming home.
Harry Kane! Harry Kane!
Who did that?
What's that from?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Jacob. That was quite good. Okay, when we come back, we're going to flip away from international soccer. Oh, my God, look, Dallas won a soccer game next on the Kick Around. To you, ladies of Spain, for we've received okay, message clearly not received.
Have you figured it out yet? Since you're the only one playing?
All right. So, welcome back to the Kick Around. We're the soccer show of record here on the old ticket. I'm Peter. He's Andy. And believe it or not, since we last talked, our beloved little Major League Soccer team up in Frisco won a soccer game. And to talk about it on the Buyer's Barricade Ticket Hotline is none other than your hero and mine from ThirdDegree.net, Buzz Carrick. Come in, Buzz.
Hello, gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed your time watching Tanner Tessman play soccer in Texas. That's about to be over.
Yeah, so about 30 minutes ago, Jeff Carlisle of ESPN tweeted out that there is evidence that our beloved Tanner Tessman, the guy that almost got two scholarships to Clemson to play soccer and football, but chose a life of professional soccer instead, may be going to play in Serie A in this upcoming transfer window. That's amazing.
That is amazing, and I have been able to independently confirm here locally, not that Jeff Carlisle needed my help or anything, but it indeed is on the verge of happening. I don't think it's 100%, but I am not expecting Tanner to be available this weekend. It's that far along that they're going to pull him out. I understand. So,
do you know dollars?
Carlisle says in the neighborhood or north of $3 million, so that's good. I don't have any confirmation of the numbers on that, and I know that it's enough that he's apparently been pulled out of the squad. So you know that happens when it's on when it's. All but done. So we're just at this point, we're just waiting for the team announcements from either side, and he gets to go play in Venice, which is probably not horrible.
Yeah, it's kind of like when Brian Reynolds got that deal to go play in Rome. I just like, man, what a life change, right? Yeah. And Andy has also pointed out that if in fact this happens, we're really going to have to pick up watching Serie A next year because there's just way too many American, specifically Dallas players now playing.
Yeah,
over there.
America,
yeah, just
FC Dallas.
Yeah, just Dallas players playing over there.
And Fabrizio said Roma wants Pepe, so we'll see.
What? Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So you know, this really, my intention here, Buzz, was to reflect on Dallas's big win against first place New England last Sunday. And it was a good win, and Pepe scored two great goals, and I think the real story that comes out of that game is the fact that your $90,000 a year 18-year-old kid has to be starting at that position and not your 32-year-old $3 million a year guy. But now I'm starting to wonder if in fact Dallas is so good at selling all of this talent. What does that do to the rest of the Major League Soccer season if, you know, critical key players just disappear in the middle of the season, not one at a time like it has been happening over the last few years, but multiple players?
Yeah, well, when you're in last place, I mean, I don't know that it changes a whole lot. They're not quite in last place anymore, but they're down near the bottom. You know, Tanner wasn't starting. You know, he plays the same spot as Brian Acosta where you have a DP. And Brandon Cervini just came back, and he plays that same spot. And Paxton can play that spot. And Thomas Roberts can play that spot. And Anders Rikarte can play that spot. So it's not like it's a problem when Tanner leaves. And this club, frankly, Peter, the way the pipeline works in this club, within the next 2 or 3 years, they need to open up about 10 spots for players coming through, kids coming through. So you're going to see more of this. It's not just going to be Tanner. It's going to be other people. I think it's going to be Dante Sealy. I think it should be Thomas Roberts. You know, it's not going to be the end of it. So far, it's not guys that are pivotal to the way the team's playing, because none of these guys are big, huge minute chewers, you know, in terms of playing time. But this is what Dallas does. They're a selling club. They make money selling their young, hot kids, and that's what they do, and that's what you have to get used to around here.
Well, it was interesting because with the game coming up tomorrow, it's the big 4th of July game, and a team that is actually behind them in the standings, and Dallas actually is the favorite to win a game for once. We actually, you on your podcast earlier this week was talking that you thought it was likely that Tanner would start this particular week. Now that won't happen. Does that mean Ricarte now magically is reappearing as a starter on this player, on this team?
Well, I don't believe that Acosta has left yet. In training on Thursday, Brian Acosta was still here, and he was still participating in the first 11.
Ah, okay.
So tomorrow, it's going to be Acosta and Paco. But then again, you got to go again on Wednesday. So, you know, this week, Tanner was still playing as, like, the second choice in that particular spot. So, you know, I don't know that things were a week ago or even 5 days ago were far enough along where they were already holding him out. It wasn't like that. But now apparently they are. So things move fast, and we'll find out really quickly. You could even, you know, put somebody like an Edwin Cerillo in there and have, like, a double six type look on the road against the Galaxy, perhaps, if you're trying to be a little more grindy. So it'll be interesting to see who takes that spot with Acosta gone and Tessman gone. Your number one and number two guys in a single position gone inside of 3 days, although one of them's just for the Gold Cup, of course. But it'll be interesting.
So is Pepe officially now the starter in the nine spot or up front? Like, has he beaten Jara for the starter role?
Oh, yeah. I believe so. No, I don't know that the coach will ever officially say that. You know how coaches are, Andy. They don't like to say that 100%. But we've talked a lot about when you start out a season, you have a veteran guy with a lot of experience and a lot of money on his contract. You have to give him a run of games. And to the point at which he lost his job, he had gotten the start in 6 of the 7 games that have been played. That's enough at that point that you can say, okay, look, I gave you 6. That's a legit run. You're not producing. We got to go with somebody else. And Patty has gone in there and done great work. I do think it was kind of funny that he scored 2 goals, and overnight, all of a sudden, he's the greatest player in the world if you follow Twitter. And it's like, he's the same guy now as he was 2 days ago, which is a great, young, hot player he just happened to get to. And the reason things are working all of a sudden is because it's not just him who makes the team better than Franco Jara does, but also Jesus playing under him in Jesus' ideal off-striker sort of position.
Yeah, and they play good. They play much better together, right?
They do. Those two guys, and Jesus even said that he and Pepe have a great connection, you know, on and off the field. They both came through the academy relatively at the same time, and they're good friends.
Yep.
And so, on top of that, they've changed the formation slightly to free up those two guys and accent those two guys and to mask some of their other deficiencies.
Right.
So, things are positive right now, so we'll see how they go.
Yeah, so all that you mentioned, Jara is seeing that on a weekly basis at training, in the locker room. He feels it. He knows what the coach is telling him. And so often when the veteran that comes in and gets paid a lot to play a certain position, when he loses the job, it affects the locker room in a way. How is Jara handling this? Can you tell so far, or is it too early still?
Well, obviously I'm not privy to, you know, how the locker room is when it's closed, but I do watch training, and the guy continues to work really hard.
Even like the body language, right? Is that's what you're looking for?
Body language is good. It's good. He's not yelling at people. He's not throwing his hands in the air. He has his head down. He's working. He's not slacking off. Now, because he is 32, they do a little load management on him, but he does bust his tail in training. And just like 2 days ago, I watched him fighting and clawing and trying to get a spot back. Now, the problem is, of course, in the last game you guys saw when you put him in for Pepe, he's a completely different player, and the setup they're using doesn't really work. They have to almost change 2 people to bring him in because they have to get some verticality from a different position because you get no verticality from Jara at all. So it'll be interesting to see how they work that aspect if they have to keep bringing him in off the bench. I mean, it would be better to use somebody in that spot like Obreon, to be honest, or Emma Tuamasi, or somebody that has some vertical ability in order to maintain the formation they're playing, which is reminiscent of Oscar Pereira's sit deep and counterpunch from back when the team was at its peak.
Yeah, Buzz, you and I talk about this a lot, and as uninteresting as they may be overall with the way this season is going, Dallas continues to be an interesting study just from the fact of the of their business model, which is, you know, they've got a young, inexperienced coach in Lucci who's struggling with roster changes. I mean, they sell their holding mid 2 weeks before the season starts, and he's got to figure out how to fix that. And, you know, he doesn't have the players really to do that. And now he's potentially losing more players in this upcoming window, and there's probably not players coming in. And then you begin to wonder, well, it, you know, you can kind of understand how that's difficult for somebody like Lucci who's learning on the job. But then if that job suddenly became open, who would want to be in that position? Who wants to be a manager of a team that is constantly putting you under the gun in terms of fluctuating rosters and never knowing who you're going to have as your talent every 6 months? I mean, that's got to make it really, really difficult to do that job.
Well, there's always somebody that will want a first division job.
You know? Of course.
I mean, it doesn't matter how bad a gig is, somebody's going to want it. But there's, that probably is a contributing factor while the Hunts for like the last five hires in a row have hired somebody basically internally from inside the organization, somebody that knows how the thing works, knows how the team is, and is willing to go into the interview and say, yeah, I agree that you're going to run the team like this, and I'm going to have to accept it. And that's basically where Lucci is. Now, Lucci's had to go from having this very ambitious idea about how he wanted to play and who he wanted to emulate, and now two seasons later, he's realized he has to go to a grind-it-out, you know, sit deep and try and steal points and grab points and fight for points kind of shape, completely different than what his ambition was 2.5 years ago. So people change and tactics change. And the bottom line is, if you take this job, you have to come in with your eyes open and know what the organization is at this point. If you come in thinking you're New York or LA of either stripe or Toronto that has the money, you forget it. It's not happening here. And you can always see these big-time coaches when if they even get so far as the interview, halfway through the process, they're like, I remember Ty Ramos, no, I'm done, right, last time around.
Yeah.
So it is what it is, you know, and if the job were to come open, I would imagine the candidates are going to be internal. It's going to be Marco Peruzzi. It's going to be Peter Lucene. It's going to be Eric Quill. I mean, those are going to be the key. There'll be some other names, but it'll be the three or four internal guys that'll be the top candidates, really.
All right, that's the good Buzz Carrick from ThirdDegree.net. If you care anything about FC Dallas, you should go be a Patreon of his. Go check out his website. Follow him on Twitter. You know, Buzz is the man. Thanks, dude. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
All right. Dallas does have a home game tomorrow night. It's their big July 4th game. They kick off at 7:30 against Vancouver. Up at Toyota Stadium, and they need that 3 points because, Andy, I don't know if you've looked at the schedule. They're not very good on the road this year. Once they finish this game, I think 12 of their next 16 games are on the road.
That's not a good schedule coming up.
No, it's not, and they didn't get all the points from the home games they were allotted at the beginning of the season. They weaseled those away. So
it's a pretty must-win then tomorrow.
Yeah,
right?
as far as must-wins go
in the middle of the season.
But the breaking news about Tanner Tessman is a bit of a hair blower. That's pretty crazy. All right, when we come back, we will get into – well, we'll need to take a little time to hug – and give Andy some love because the Copas didn't go his way, and we'll learn more about that next here on the Kick Around.
Bobblehead.
All right, if you have an annoying English fan friend that you know personally, and I'm looking at you, Dan Crook, just be prepared for all hell to break loose because England is winning now 4-0 over Ukraine.
Liverpool in the house!
And you're going to hear this phrase, it's coming home a lot. So,
Henderson scored the fourth.
It's always about Liverpool.
No, your little boy scored a goal.
Liverpool totally won Europe.
Man United was in the house, and now Liverpool's in the house. Suddenly,
really,
like, we don't...
Reductive there.
Okay. Andy, yes. Now I know you're kind of in a bad mood. You've been kind of sulky and pouty all day since you kind of like... You kind of just like sullenly
I'm fine.
Walked into the green room earlier today.
I'm fine.
Because last night at the Copa America, your team had to take on Brazil.
They play last night, huh?
Chile!
Yes. Yeah, so remember what I was saying about just wait till the quarterfinals with this Copa America. That's when the games will really start to get more interesting, because really teams weren't playing for much in the first round because 8 of the 10 teams would qualify to the quarters. Now the games are actually decent, and the first game played yesterday was Peru against Paraguay. It was a 3-3 affair, 2 red cards, PKs.
It had a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining game. The standard of soccer wasn't as good as the Euros, but it was entertaining.
Can I ask you a side question? When you watch the Copa Americas, do you watch them in Spanish or English?
Copa America. I watch it three ways.
What?
Hold on a second.
Yeah, I watch it three ways because it depends. Like if Chile's playing, or when Chile plays, I'll listen to radio from Chile. I'll adjust it to the TV.
You'll sync it to the television.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you listen to a Chilean play-by-play.
Yeah, of the game,
like on a national radio channel.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. Okay. You can get that online.
Who is the national Chilean play-by-play?
It's from Chile.
That's what I'm asking.
Oh, I don't know his
who
name.
Who is their?
Yeah.
Wow, what a great
Ian
name.
Dark.
I don't know. There's like 8 stations you can choose from.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I thought you had a favorite.
But I typically listen to Fox. That would be
English.
But by the way, did you watch at all the Peru-Paraguay game?
I did not see any.
And so I did want to bring this up. Kate Scott was the play-by-play announcer
in that English, game. Former English national team player.
Kate Scott, the lady that does, I thought she was, no, she's American.
Oh, I thought Kate was, or who am I? Oh, I'm thinking of, I'm getting her confused with an English player who now does TV, whose last name is Scott.
She's analyst, though, I think.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
okay.
Kate Scott was the play-by-play, and she's done football and hockey, and so when I saw that she was going to do soccer, I was like, you know.
Because you.
You know, not the quality of
because you're a chauvinist.
Not the quality of the play-by-play, but just like when we get play-by-play announcers that only do another sport and they do soccer. She was really she was good, and she it's like almost like she played. So you have to be equally impressed with her being able to do football and hockey. Because like if you and I, well, I don't know about you, but if I had to talk like football in depth or hockey in depth or basketball in depth, we've heard it before, and it's bad. So anyway, kudos to Kate Scott. I thought she did really well as the play-by-play.
And what's the third way?
And
you
the
said
third
you'd
way
watch three
Univision.
Ways. Univision.
Yeah.
Okay.
And every once in a while, I'll put in Univision to see what they think of a certain player.
Now,
anyway.
You seem to be avoiding
Brazil-Chile. So Brazil-Chile.
Brazil-Chile
Brazil is the heavy favorite. They still are. They have the most depth in the tournament. They've been playing the best up to now, although some teams have stretched them a little bit. And so Chile was the big underdog coming into this game, and it was 0-0 at halftime. And then, but they started Alexis Sanchez, who was coming off injury. And just like with another player we were talking about.
Were you wearing your Alexis Sanchez Manchester United jersey?
I was not wearing the long sleeve because it's warm. but I thought about it, actually, just to shake things up. I actually wore my white Chile national team jersey because they wore white, and I have a white, too. That's a pretty good fan, huh? They started Alexis Sanchez just like with De Bruyne, and he wasn't good. And to me, those are the situations where you wait and you bring him into the game to see if you need him later, and he'll have a bigger effect, I think.
I also am fascinated by the fact that the Chilean national team last night, their starting 11 average age like 30.2 years old.
This is the golden generation, and if you saw how the subs did, you would understand why they're just trying to milk everything they can from this golden generation, because those coming behind them are not the golden generation. Let's just put it that way.
And so now, what are the other two games?
So tomorrow it's Uruguay and Colombia.
That would be tonight.
Uruguay and Colombia at 5, and Argentina and Ecuador at 8. And it's setting up for Argentina and Messi against Neymar and Brazil. By the way, Neymar.
It will be Peru and
Brazil in one semi on Tuesday.
I thought Peru was terrible. Aren't they?
They've
been pretty poor.
Yeah,
but they them beating Paraguay was a surprise.
Yeah, Paraguay had a red card or was a man down for a large part of that game.
Now the other incident that happened last night was it De Jesus that did this?
Yes, right.
So if you have not seen the red card that happened in the Brazil,
Gabriel Jesus,
it is pretty lucky that he didn't literally almost chop that dude's head off. Because De Jesus comes in very high,
trying to
karate chop.
karate chop with the leg. And
for the ball, but you know.
And he gets the guy on the side of the face, doesn't he?
Yeah, if he gets
cleats
square,
up and everything.
If he gets him square in the face, we have a bad situation. Now, you could tell that he felt bad. He stayed on the field. The red card was given immediately. I mean, the referee sprinted towards Jesus, gave him the red card. He stayed there. He wanted to wait for the guy to get up. Guy finally got up, and then that's when he walked off. He patted him on the back, said he was sorry. But he could have.
Oh, that makes it all better when you pat the guy on the back.
Well, no, look, it happened against Chile. I was like, call the game right here. Give it to Chile. That was so bad. But, you know, Chile couldn't. A man up for a half because it was 1-0. They had just scored their goal. If they can't score a man up, then, you know, Brazil was probably more deserving of advancing. One interesting story about the guy taking or the guy that came on for Sanchez, and that's the British player who has a Chilean mother. He's born in England, Ben Brereton, mm-hmm. right? So do you know the story about how he was found on Football Manager? So he had an interview in England, random interview with the media, and he said, yeah, I'm eligible for Chile too. My mom's Chilean. Just kind of casually mentioning that in the interview, it made...
Because he was born in Stoke, but who does he play
Blackburn.
For? Blackburn. Yeah. That's what it is. Okay.
So that little snippet made the written interview part, and there was a Football Manager researcher that happened to read that, and you know, the Football Manager has researchers all over the world, and they just fine-tuning the game, making sure it's as accurate as possible, so people like Sam that play it can get the most realistic
experience as
possible.
Properly.
Right. So he saw that, and so he changed his profile on Football Manager to be both English and Chilean, to have both English and Chilean eligibility. So somebody in Chile sees that with the Federation. Because, as we know, professional teams scout through Football Manager because you can't get to all parts of the world. And so they pick up on it. They contact him, and then they start a relationship with him where they're like actually talking to him for a while now. They're following his games. Meanwhile, a fan who plays Football Manager in Chile starts a campaign to get him on the national team independently of this. So now he's like a folk figure. In Chile.
A cult figure in Chile.
Not cult figure.
A folk hero.
Folk hero. Thank you. I get those mixed up. But the fans now think that it was their campaign on social media that got the national team.
To get him to come into camp?
They, in fact, had been following him for a couple years. But anyway, Football Manager.
I did not know that story. That's a good story.
That's awesome.
Football Manager playing a part in real football.
Okay, so I think it's fair to assume that this is going to culminate in a Brazil-Argentina final.
It's all leading to that. I think that's
so assuming that happens, when is that game?
That game would be played next Saturday night.
Saturday night, okay.
Yeah, right. That would be Messi and Neymar. Neymar, by the way, what a man. His diving is like out of control.
Oh, is it even worse than
normal? Yeah, it's just he falls for anything, you know?
You think he probably, now that he's back playing in a South American tournament, he just does more of it because it's more accepted there than it is maybe in Europe?
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, the referee from Argentina wasn't taking most of it.
Okay.
But maybe there's some truth to
that. You know, that actually lines up because that means the Copa America final will be Saturday night. And the European final will be on Sunday.
Sunday afternoon, correct. So FC Dallas tie-in, Argentina-Ecuador tonight at 8. Carlos Grueso is back on the roster.
Because I miss Carlos Grueso so much.
He was out due to COVID, but he's back on the team. So he may play tonight against Messi and Argentina.
All right. So go check that stuff out. All right. Well, Andy, I'm sorry your national team, your motherland, is out of the Copa America 2021?
2020, but it moved to 2021 also.
Yeah, whatever that meant. You know what I mean.
Yep.
All right, when we come back, it's America's favorite soccer segment. It's called The Dribble, and it's next here on The Kick Around. Well, looky there. The semifinals are now set of the European Championships. As Jacob just reported, England has now beaten Ukraine. Not 1-0, as I predicted, in a snoozer. No, it was an electric 4-0. They have gone this entire tournament and still not allowed a goal. That is pretty impressive.
Are you going to root against the, what are we calling them? Not the team of destiny, but what are we calling them? The sentimental favorite?
The heartwarming story?
Yeah.
The feel-good story of the tournament?
Are you going to root against them? in the semis?
Hell yeah.
Ruthless, heartless.
I have no heart.
You have no heart.
No pun intended.
Sam, you with me with Denmark?
Hell yeah.
Rack 'em.
Right.
So here's how this goes. Tuesday, it is the Mediterranean Derby, as I learned it was called.
Yeah, and I learned it from you a second ago.
On the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So Italy-Spain is a history-filled rivalry. Mm-hmm. Those guys have played each other 37 times, and they each share 11 wins, and there's been 15 draws.
So this is to decide it all.
This is like world champion of all time if you win this. So that should be an interesting game. Off the top of my head, I have to think Italy are the favorites to get through that game. They've been the more consistent of all of the teams.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's who I had picked to get through the second stage to get to the final to face England.
Now, Italy did have that injury late in the game. I can't remember the guy's name. It turns out he tore his Achilles late in the game. And he's a pretty critical player on their left-hand side. So they'll be missing him. But I still think Italy. So now that is on
Spinazzola.
Tuesday. Yeah, Spinazzola. And then on the on Wednesday at 2, it is now England versus Denmark.
That'll be a good game, too.
Yeah, and England will be the home team.
Yeah.
And it should be a great game. And England, Italy, well, actually any
combination thereof.
Any combination would end up being, as well as Denmark has played. But we talk about this all the time in international tournament knockout.
Mm-hmm.
It is all about depth, especially when you start to get to quarter, semis, and finals.
Yeah.
You're in your seventh game or whatever it is, eighth game, and
injuries,
yellows, just tired legs.
Yellow cards.
Now, the way the yellow cards work out is that if you got through this game, you can't get yellow carded out of the final.
Right. Yeah, that they've changed that over the last 10 years in both World Cup and Euros.
Yeah. So I think after this game, everything gets washed.
Right.
So you start with a clean slate after the quarters.
But you can get yellow carded out of the semis.
If you had gotten a second yellow today, you would not be able to play in the semi. But if
now you can't. Right?
Correct.
Okay. Gotcha.
So you get washed. You're washed clean.
Yeah.
And so unless you get ejected out of the semifinals, you're in for the final. All right. So that is how that is all set up. Tuesday at 2, Italy, Spain, and then Wednesday at 2, England versus Denmark. Place your bets now. Let's do it. America's favorite soccer segment. It's known as the dribble. Couple things I wanted to talk about here, Andrew. First off,
got your little notepad there, huh?
There is a player available on the market.
Okay.
I don't know if the Hunts can afford him. His name is Lionel Messi.
Mm-hmm. Miami, I thought.
You know, it's funny. Is there a soccer club of any level in the pyramid in the globe that doesn't have somebody on their social media team that hasn't photoshopped Messi's head into their jersey?
Might be FC Dallas.
Yeah, it might. Yeah, Dallas may be the only one that has not done it yet.
But he'll end up in Miami if he comes to MLS. But
we called
this years ago, Peter.
The word is that the deal that is being worked out between him and Barcelona is worth bonkers dollars and includes a clause that would allow him to play a year more in Barcelona, then go to the United States, I assume Miami, and then go back to Barcelona as some sort of ambassador.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Play on their senior team, maybe.
Yep.
The other story is I got a really weird...
Stop.
What?
When we talked about this, though, when we said Messi's coming here, I think it was a year or two ago, we were laughed at. You were laughed at on my... people laughed at me through you, right?
Probably. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really, you know, people laugh at me all the time.
That's a good
point.
Lose.
I don't know if that'll actually happen. We'll see. He's available. Somebody may try to grab him. It's going to take an incredible amount of money to do it. And I don't even know how Barcelona can even afford to pull this off, considering they're $1 billion in debt.
Messi will play in MLS.
It's nuts. All now, right. The side story to this is I got this weird press release email this week from a guy who owns a European adult cam website. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I forgot what it's called. and he was open lettering to the Barcelona board.
Oh, no.
He was like, look, I'm a football fan. I'm a Barcelona fan. Mm-hmm. I want to help make sure that you, Barcelona, retain Messi's services until the end of his career. So I would like to know if you would allow me to pay you 10 million euros a year to become the official adult cam streaming service of Barcelona Football Club.
10 million a year. That doesn't sound like a lot at the end of the day, though, right?
I mean, it's for like a club 10% like of the Messi deal, maybe, annually.
Yeah. They say yes?
I don't know if he's received a response back. Over in the Premiership, we don't have one or two, three new managers.
Yeah, let's go through the
Crystal
list here.
Palace has a new manager.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to announce to everybody who that is?
No, you do.
You don't know, do you?
Is it Nuno?
No.
Who?
It's the French superstar.
Oh, yes, I knew that. Yes. Yes.
I'm going to make you say it.
I'm going to look it up on Google because I read it the other day.
Going great.
We're the shocker show of record. What's his name, Andy?
While Andy looks this up, I've asked FC Dallas if they have a Messi graphic. So if we get an answer before the end of the show, I'll let you know.
Oh, no, no. Vieira.
Yes. Patrick Vieira, formerly of NYCFC,
yes,
is now the manager of record at Crystal Palace.
He who succeeded Jason Christ, right?
No, I think there was... No, the other guy was there before him.
No, I think it was Vieira, right?
Was it Vieira the guy that came in after Jason?
Yes.
Anyway. And then Tottenham finally announced Nuno as their manager.
Right, Tottenham was Nuno.
And I'm worried more that Tottenham will drag down Nuno's career than Nuno will have any sort of negative impact on Spurs. Because I still think that whole situation's a mess, and I don't know how you feel when you are arguably not even one of the first five choices for that job.
And he didn't want to take the job initially either. I mean, he stepped away from...
That's one of those deals that doesn't smell good going into it, but maybe that's why it works out in the end. I like Spurs, and I really like Nuno. I hope it works out for both parties, but the way that that relationship came together just feels almost as weird as them announcing Mourinho the way that they did so long ago and how that turned out, but for completely different reasons.
You know, he gets off to a good start, it will all be forgotten.
You're right.
So should Sam tell us who Everton hired?
Well, I do want to talk about this a little bit because there's a lot of consternation, anger. Are you, Sam, as an Everton fan, upset that your new manager is a former Liverpool great?
I don't care at all. It doesn't.
And Rafa Benitez.
Like, there are things about this hire that worry me and give me pause, but him
such
managing
as?
For Liverpool, I just don't know if he has it anymore. Like, his last stop was Newcastle. I mean, he's got a lot of things in the trophy case, but the recent success is not.
He did pretty well at Newcastle, considering all things.
I mean, yeah, Newcastle's not exactly a superpower, so the chances to succeed aren't great. And maybe this works out just fine, but I am definitely not at all concerned about his
previous
Liverpool employment.
And you probably think it's silly, right?
Well, my favorite is that some very unhappy Everton fans placed a banner that said, "Do not do this. We know where you live," but it wasn't actually at the correct house.
So irony just galore.
So, but I don't think we American sports fans understand the rival club passion and do's and don'ts that you see in Europe, in South America with this kind of stuff.
I remember when Sir Alex signed Michael Owen to play for Manchester United after being arguably one of the most famous Liverpool players of all time, mm-hmm. and how crazy everybody got over that.
Yeah.
People were sideways over that deal. So it is different, and it will be interesting to see how it goes. Everton also officially announced their new beautiful stadium that they're going to build right there on the water. So, Everton has an owner that's willing to spend money and to go against the tide, and for him to make the decision to hire Rafa Benitez as his manager has to work out for him to keep the Everton fan base on his side.
Right, that's pretty risky. And also, I think it shows that, you know, they had tried to go in a different direction and they weren't able to sign their, like, top five choices.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, speaking of the city of Liverpool, did you see that your favorite team, Andy, are being big jerks because they will not allow Mohamed Salah to participate in the Olympics with the Egyptian national team? They have blocked his ability to play in the Olympics.
Are they entitled to block?
They
can
are.
They do that?
They can do that.
Okay.
But poor Mo Salah was really looking forward.
Was he?
To go into Japan.
Or was it one of these, hey, can I meet with you? And then they go meet with
hey, I think
they're going to come
comes the Liverpool.
There goes the spin.
So tell them no, and then I'm going to cry foul publicly. But,
so when Egypt gets knocked out of the group stage in the Olympics because they don't have their best player in their national team who could have come to Japan and played in the tournament,
did Mo Salah
be Jurgen Klopp's fault.
Did he enjoy winning Champions League? Did he enjoy winning Premier League and everything that goes with it? Did he enjoy all that?
What kind of indentured servitude crap is this? Like, oh, you must love all this. You can't do that. What kind of nonsense is this?
And my favorite of all the soccer journalists, Pablo Maurer, pulled another one out of the hat this week.
So you weren't being sarcastic. Okay.
Pablo are very, very different. Pablo writes great. Somebody said the other day, Pablo's probably the best soccer journalist who cares about anything other than the actual game itself.
Yeah.
Because all the stories Pablo tells have nothing to do with the actual game. It's all the side stories.
What makes him a great...
And what makes him so good at his job.
Right.
Well, this week he told the story of the original Columbus Crew logo, which featured, if you're not familiar, this really kind of...
The Village People.
Three guys in hard hats. It was like three guys standing close with their arms crossed in construction worker helmets, and it was laughed at the time. Pablo actually somehow managed to hunt down one of the models of the original three Columbus Crew logo characters, which was pretty great. So if you have a subscription to The Athletic, you should absolutely go read
it. Any little nugget from the story, though, that you can, I mean...
Have you read it?
No, I haven't read it yet.
Just the path, it took him over a year to find this guy, and the path that he went through, including talking to the designer who designed the original logo, I can't remember his name, he's in his 70s now and retired, and maybe one of the interesting side stories is this old guy... Again, like yelling at clouds, talking about how lame and boring and plain logos are these days compared to back in his day when we had to put some character in these logos and give them some vibrancy and personality. It was good stuff. So good to Pablo.
Do you like when teams come out with new logos and crests and then they have the 18-point explanations for them? Are you a big fan of that?
I don't mind the explainer graphic. But this week we got the Angel City FC, which is a beautiful logo, but they tried a little hard on the explainer.
They went over
graphic.
The top.
They did go a little. They kind of stretched it, a little bit of that. Hey, if you haven't seen, that's a good-looking logo.
Yeah, it is. Quick note to Austin, had their first win at home. Just saw highlights of that. Pretty good atmosphere.
Yeah, they're having a good time, and Andy and I will be sitting in seats at Q2 Stadium on August 29th as FC Dallas visits Austin for the very first time, and we are very, very much looking forward to that, and thank you to a particular P1 who are letting us sit in his seats. All right, that does it for another fun-filled edition of The Dribble. England 4, Ukraine nothing. Oh, don't forget, when we get around to doing a show next week, Andy, another international tournament will be here. The Gold Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Our international tournament.
Zone.
Mexico plays Saturday night, and U.S. will play some team. Yeah. I don't know who. Yeah. I don't think we know yet.
Right.
On Sunday. So we'll talk all about that. And I'm hoping that because there won't be a game that day, I'm hoping the good Lars Sivertsen will be spending time with us to review the European Championships and discuss the aforementioned final as well.
We'll ask him if he thought it was boring also, like you did.
Didn't say it was boring.
Mm-hmm. Kind of did. Yeah,
I did not. I just said it was
no story
missing
line, no big player.
The really big thing to kind of grab and hold on to.
That's kind of what boring is.
Defines boring.
Listen, you're on thin ice with me, mister.
Do it. Pull the trigger. I dare you. Find my replacement.
Okay.
Go ahead and do it.
You've been called out, Peter.
I can have a couple Saturdays off. Not a big deal.
Okay. Tempting fate is the Samuel. All right. Thank you, Jacob, for doing some fine ticker work today. Samuel, you're on thin ice, mister. And Tyler, good work today, buddy. Good on you. P1s, we love and adore you. Go on, get out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s. Where is Liverpool going to finish this year?
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound.